Why have I quit my job? Why have I, you know, bought a van? And why am I going to drive around the country? Well, I'm passionate about the idea that you need to be heard. And I want to stitch these stories together across the states. We're going to find the commonalities. And it's going to be really an amazing experience. And I look forward to you joining me on the job.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Mental Health Today. It's your host, Ken Stearns, and a beautiful day here. I'm looking out on some of the hills or the mountains, I guess you'd call them, in Palm Springs. So on the, continuing on the journey, as you saw in that, in the van, painting the van or putting the stickers on there, kind of pontificating, what am I going to see on the road? What am I going to see when I interview people across the United States? And it was, the common thread was mental health. That led me to start this podcast, as well as start the JAR Foundation. So this, we're now going on, started in March, and this is about our 105th or 110th episode already. Just wild to think how many really amazing people we've had on, heard some great things that are happening in the mental health space, and a lot of stuff that wasn't even going on a couple years ago. You know, people that weren't in the space a few years ago and are in the space now and are all doing really exciting stuff. Kind of like Dana. Dana, welcome to Mental Health Today. Welcome to the show. Thanks for being a guest.
Thanks for having me, Ken. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. And, you know, like I was saying, there's so many people in the space right now that have got this really cool journey getting there. And then kind of, you know, like the right door opens up and here you are, right? Here we are. We're in the, like, right where you were supposed to be.
Yes.
And it's just kind of interesting to me how many people are like this and are on this journey. And it's strange that they're all arriving at the same time as, you know, some sort of rescue mission to kind of help the country and to help people. I can only hope that's what I hope it is. I think it is the universe kind of just lining people up and drawing people to help.
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I just look at your journey. I look at so many of the, as I pre-interview people, I look at the backgrounds and I'm just, you know, I go, how did you get here? And I look at your background and it's like, and then at the end, it's like, yeah. And then as we talked before, you alluded to this before, we talked about workplace mental health and you kind of said, oh, I could tell a story. And I had a feeling that there was more behind that as well. But again, welcome to the show. And I want to hog up the intro. Thanks for being a guest. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, well, I think what you're alluding to is the fact that I work in the space of psychedelic medicine, mm-hmm. or mental wellness.
Yeah.
But unlike quite a few people in this field, I'm working directly with people who are to use plant medicines and psychedelics for their mental wellness, for their self-development. And so I'm there as a support person to ensure that they can do that safely and with the best propensity. But my route into doing this, you know, many people who are doing the work that I'm doing come from a therapist background or a, you know, years and years of kind of work in the mental health field.
Yes.
Whereas I came into it in a very circuitous way. You can, I have a very corporate background and I built a career for over 30 years in the realm of corporate communications, global corporate communications. Yeah. Over the years, I developed a bit of a specialty working in areas that are new technologies or emerging industries where the communications rules aren't quite written yet. So we're establishing best in class and figuring out how to communicate these messages. So really from a career standpoint, it made sense that I was recruited into the corporate side of the psychedelic industry as it emerged.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I came into this as chief communications officer and head of investor relations for one of the publicly traded psychedelic companies.
Okay, that makes so much sense. What a great transit. And you would have been like, oh, what an interesting role.
Oh, I was so passionate about it, Ken, because, you know, I've been surrounded by mental health issues for all of my life. You know, I'm the child of a parent who had addiction problems and suicidal ideation. I have my ex-husband who's been diagnosed with bipolar, with a personality disorder, with addictions again, just surrounded by it. And I was just so happy to learn about this potential alternative solution for, you know, especially as we have this mental health epidemic right now. And I thought I was really doing good in the world by being at the helm of communications and being helping to educate the world about this potential and helping to help destigmatize these medicines. You know, if you're looking at it that way, everything was wonderful and the ultimate position in my career. But there were a few things going on for me. One of those being, you know, what was happening in my life. I'm dealing with a very ill parent, checking off all the boxes of success and yet kind of feeling like something was missing here. And then adding in that as head of investor relations, investors who just wanted to make money were my number one audience. I was really passionate about the healing potential. Right. Yeah. Oh,
I mean, how disingenuous the conversation is, right? The client is saying, the investor is saying one thing and you're kind of like, oh, the word, how do you choose the words, right? Okay. Yeah. I get it.
Yeah. It was a tricky place for me to be communicating to people who want to make the next quick buck and make it fast and why isn't it happening? And so what happened basically is I was working with these medicines in a therapeutic way. And I had myself a very impactful experience with psilocybin mushrooms, where I basically got the download that we've got you in the right place, but you're not doing the right thing. It's time to step away from the mind and come back into my heart and really talk from my heart, communicate from my heart, embrace all my 20 plus years of mentoring and coaching and working with people and come down and work at the level that I can really be effecting change on a personal level. And I actually came out with three pillars, which was to provide loving guidance, to share evidence-based knowledge, and to cultivate supportive communities. That's how clear the message was, which kind of left me going, well, what the heck am I supposed to do with that?
Go back and say those again. Those are pretty cool.
Yeah, I know. They're so clear. Provide loving guidance, share evidence-based knowledge, and cultivate supportive community.
That would be kind of like if that was your download, that would make me sit down and think for a couple of days. Like, what did you do with that?
Yeah. And it didn't take me very long though, to realize that this was a really clear message to me and I needed to take care of myself by listening. And it was 6 weeks later that I resigned from my corporate position and just dove I walked away from my financial security, my ego, my identity, my career, and I just dove headfirst into learning, training, apprenticing, figuring out how can I actualize this opportunity that I have to really be supportive and helpful to people who are suffering and who really want to grow.
Yeah, and people that want to grow. Mm-hmm. That's the other thing. Yeah. I think for sure people going into psychedelics are they want change and they understand it may bring change and they're going to be maybe different on the other side of it.
Absolutely.
So it's interesting. It's an interesting patient.
Absolutely. Yes. And you know, the people that I work with range from people who are really suffering from depressed mood, from, trauma, past trauma.
Yeah.
People who really just want to actualize their potential. They just, maybe they're more like the way that I was. I was stuck. I had everything like looked good on paper, but my heart just was like, there's something missing here. There's something that just doesn't feel good. There's something I can't just stay like this for the rest of my life. So I'm just not being able to put a finger on it, but being in a rut, being stuck, just needing to breathe more life, fresh life into what you're doing. So yeah, even for that personal development and growth.
Really, that reminds me of almost the same words, Neil Gahney.
Gahney, yes.
Yeah. I mean, his story, like he said, I was successful by every metric, but I felt like I didn't feel good. He's like, I felt empty. And because I felt hollow and you know, like alone. And like, he's described, he's like, I was married to a beautiful woman. I was in a great relationship, but I was alone.
Yeah.
And he just had an epiphany.
He's not alone in that. Like, just so many of us that are in that and don't know how to change it because society says that you're supposed to be this way. So then you feel like, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with me that I feel this way?
Yeah, exactly. I've got everything that I'm ticking every box, but yet I don't feel, you know, I don't feel whole. It's not easy stepping away from the corporate paycheck though. You know, because you do end up, you know, we end up living according, you know, we live at the level we earn and, you know, and all of a sudden to go to zero or to do something, you know, drastically different is dangerous and scary. And you have responsibilities.
Yeah.
And society says that's lunatic. Only lunatics do that.
Yep. Yeah. Communicating this to my family was, you know, it was a sit down conversation.
It's a real, yeah, but I think for yourself, once people understand it's for you.
You know, Ken, anybody in my life who knows me from before I made this decision and after, they know that I made the right decision. Yeah. It's just obvious.
Even to yourself, you're a different person.
Yeah.
Nicer, yeah. More patient.
Yeah, more understanding, calmer. Yeah. A more present.
More present.
Yeah.
A little more great. Weirdly, more grateful.
More grateful. Absolutely more grateful.
Weirdly, though, like weirdly, because before you had a lot, like you had more.
Right.
In an air quotes kind of a way, right?
Yeah.
You had the title, you had the identity.
Yeah.
The job, the swag.
Yeah. And none of it is worth anything if you don't feel good.
Yeah, no, I know that.
Yeah,
absolutely. Very interesting. And so this is kind of cool because I've talked to a few people who are building organizations around putting somebody like yourself with a patient. And so it's good. I think you're the first person I've met that we've had on this is actually doing the, you know, the holding of the hand, I don't know if that's a good description.
Mm-hmm.
And are you doing clients in Canada?
Yes. So I am in Vancouver, Canada, and we are in this really unique ecosystem up here when it comes to plant medicines and psychedelics. In Vancouver, so unlike the States, drugs, basically medicines are scheduled at a federal level. So what you see in the States, you know, like Oregon has legalized psilocybin therapy.
Yeah.
Colorado. And then there's like cities in Oakland, California, you know, there's pockets that decriminalize or legalize, and that can't be done in Canada. That's why we were the first full country to legalize cannabis because it can't be done in little pockets. Mm. So looking at psychedelics the same way, it's effectively not decriminalized or legalized here yet, although we are on the way. However, the municipality of Vancouver and the Vancouver Police Department have both publicly stated that prosecuting anyone for plant medicine and psychedelics is the bottom of their list.
Okay.
They are just not interested in it. Mm-hmm. And at last count, in downtown Vancouver, so that's not even including the suburbs where there's more, there were 11 open mushroom dispensaries. And these are like fully branded, you know, beautiful shops with like connoisseurs to take you through what would you like, how would you feel. And so, you know, I don't have as many legal qualms up here.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm able to speak more openly about what I do. I'm just going on that gray line because what I'm offering is harm reduction and support. but I'm not officially administering a psychedelic substance.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So you don't sell it. You don't.
Yeah. Right. Playing a bit in that gray area, but quite comfortably up here.
Yeah, I think you're okay. I mean, as a guide, you're not administering it, you're not buying it, selling it. You're just there to like you said, harm reduction. You're there to make sure somebody's going to do something, and they've got a guide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to help educate them so they know what to expect, and they know what not to expect, and they know what's happening in their brain, and they're comfortable, and they know that they're safe. You know, so allowing them to have the experience that gives them the best propensity for the transformation that they are looking for.
That's a good question. I don't know if you know the answer to this, but it came up. It just came up in a thread I was reading. And it was a guy saying how he had taken DMT, and it was very short, but he had, zoomed out of his body, very traditional kind of a story, zoomed out of his body, zoomed up the outer space, and then saw the world all like a giant electrical, system, all, everything connected. And then he was a different person in a different country rapidly, all these different people. But the idea was like, it's a similar story. And are these really truly brain tricks that are being done by the psilocybin or by the DMT, by the psychedelics, whether it's plant or man-made? Is this just images in the brain, or, are you really able to connect into some sort of other network? Is it trickery in the brain? Because it's kind of weird, right? If it is, this all seems kind of funny.
It's hard to explain the concept of altered state of consciousness.
Yeah.
Where what is happening in your brain is very real to your brain.
Yes.
But it's not what is happening in your physical location.
Yes. Yeah.
But I think the best way that I can explain, there's a few different mechanisms on how psychedelics work in your brain. Mm-hmm. But I think bringing it down to the easiest way to explain it is if you think of your brain like a snow globe, those you can shake up those snow globes in the fresh fallen snow. And when you're a baby, your brain is like, it's got all that beautiful fresh fallen snow. There's no traps in it. And then, as you experience life and relationships and situations, you start to make sense of who you are, how you fit into the world, what the world is like, whether it's a hostile place, whether it's a loving place. And all these experiences, they create thought patterns, which are grooves in that snow.
Mm.
You've got a lot of tracks going back and forth. You're making sense. You're taking, your thoughts from one destination to the other. But over the years, we get stuck in specific thought patterns, in specific grooves in the snow. And we go back and forth and back and forth on those. And that's all we can see. And that's all we can think. And that's all we know. If we look up on either side, all we see is snow. So you don't even know there's another perspective or another way of seeing.
Yeah, you can. Yeah. Interesting.
Right. So psychedelics, pretty much, they give you the opportunity to take that snow globe, shake it back up again, and have fresh fallen snow come back. And this is where your thoughts can off-road. They can go to new destinations, or they can get to the same destination but go in different ways. And you see new scenery, and you see things in a whole different light. And this is the opportunity that a psychedelic experience can give you. And I think the important thing to note is that underneath that fresh fallen snow, those grooves are still there. They're so ingrained that they're still there. And so your work in a psychedelic experience comes after the psychedelic experience in a process called integration, which is taking whatever hallucination you saw, whatever download you got, whatever insights you got, and figuring out, how am I going to embody this? How am I going to incorporate it into my life? What habits do I need to bring out in? What things do I need to get rid of? What about my relationships? And let's look at the relationships. Which ones are going to support this new reality? Which ones maybe is it time to move on from? So this is, again, we work a lot on the preparation for the experience. The experience itself happens, and then the real work comes afterwards in the process called integration.
I love the idea of prepping yourself with some intention And then, you know, what is that that you get? And then you, and then actually interesting, integrating it.
Yes.
Which you took a fairly serious, you took this to a fairly serious level.
Oh yeah. Well, snowboard.
I wouldn't recommend that level of action for everybody.
Yeah. No, you don't. It's not the most common thing for people to come in and then get their job. Don't worry. This is not likely going to happen to you. You're not likely going to go home and get divorced or quit your job or do anything quite drastic like that. But it might give you some new insights that will shape how you decide to be in relationship or be in your career, et cetera.
Yeah, I love that analogy of the fresh snow. I think that is so true. It's a great description, you know, because it does get you out of those tracks and it does seem to patch them up a bit somehow.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I think it is that lifting you up out of the rut where you can't see over these ruts and it's all you can see and think about, right? Ruminate on something. And so now once you get above that again, you can see the you know, you don't end up just seeing only that. There's a lot more you see.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it gives you this neuroplasticity.
The neuroplasticity. Yeah.
And the other thing that it does is there's a part of our brain called the default mode network. You're probably aware of this, but this is the area of your brain where your so-called ego resides.
Yeah.
And ego not in a necessarily in a bad way, but just when you're not occupied, your thoughts are not occupied with external things, automatically kind of goes to thinking about where you fit into the world and your experiences in the world. Okay. And a lot of times ruminating about the past or worrying about the future. And it's been shown that people who suffer from depression and anxiety and PTSD as well tend to have overactive default mode networks.
Ooh, okay.
And what this psychedelic experience does is it essentially shuts down that default mode network, or it quietens right down for a period of time. And then when it comes back online, it comes back in softer or maybe more realigned in a new way. So that activity in your default mode network softens down and quiets down. And so I think this is a big mechanism that works when we're talking about things like clinical diagnoses of depression and anxiety. That default mode network has a lot to do with the mechanism of psychedelics.
Just that alone is quite powerful. Yeah. If it does quiet that voice, that ego voice down. And for sure, if you've taken psilocybin or LSD, or I've never taken MDMA, but yeah, that ego, the destruction of your ego, is an interesting thing. I think it's, I'm trying to think of the name of the actor. There's an actor from the 50s, 60s, 40s. I can't remember who it was, but he was a big, was taking acid at the time, LSD at the time, when it was still just being played around with, I think. When it wasn't quite illegal, but he was talking about, as a famous actor of black and white stuff. But anyway, he was talking about how it was the looking at his ego and destroying his own self image and watching it crumble. And he was saying how powerful it was for him. Like, and also, cause this is a very famous guy at a very famous time. And he takes this and his ego goes away and he realizes he's just a human underneath it all. A reminder.
Yes.
Of who he is.
Yeah,
a really good actor after that, even a better, like a much better human. Oh, I can't remember who that was.
I'm curious now. But, you know, I think what that speaks to is what we hear so much about these experiences, that they tend to really catalyze connection, the feeling of connection. Yes. So connection with yourself, connection with others, and connection with the greater world. And you really realize that we're all together. We're all in this together. And it just gives us empathy and understanding, and we feel understood. And I think, you know, it speaks a lot to, I think what we're suffering from so much in this mental health crisis is disconnection. In fact, there's a whole book about it by Johann Johari called Lost Connections. And it basically is on the premise, Dr. Gabor Mate says that the opposite of addiction is not sobriety, it's connection. And Johan Johari, he kind of looks at the myth of antidepressants, and he comes to that same kind of conclusion that, you know, the cure for much more than just addiction is not pharmaceuticals or necessarily one-on-one talk therapy, but being connected. And we have lost that so much in our modern Western world. You know, we don't have those things that draw us together as a real community.
Oh, I mean, yeah. And just connection is those, you know, connections to your past, you know, your grandparents telling stories at the fireplace or at the picnic table. You know, we've lost all that, you know, generational connect. I think we've lost generational connections.
Totally.
Right. Between generations.
Absolutely.
Which was a thing where, you know, we used to live in the same house.
Yeah.
And grandmas took care of the grandkids and the, you know, two generation parents and the grand, you know, the other grandparents probably worked, right? And the kids and the grandparents hung out, and the other two parents were the ones, you know, doing the work and coming and going.
Yep.
Yeah. So you lose, you know, we lose a lot of that, and we got a lot of single parenthood.
Yes.
It's one more, you know, half of the equation, half of that yin yang is gone.
Yeah.
In those houses. So, you know, yeah, you start really, we've cut off quite a few of our fingers on the communication aspect for humans, what we should be communicating.
Yeah. And I think even if you look at friend circles these days, so many people have I have friends I could call to go and have a beer with or go watch a show or something, but do they really know me? Like, do we ever talk about anything really intimate and caring? Are we vulnerable? Are we authentic? Are we witnessed and heard and supported? So
it's socially, it's also dangerous to talk about what you think.
Yes, true.
And it didn't used to be that way. Discourse used to be a regular thing. You know, the old days, you strengthened your arguments by having discussions with somebody you disagreed with.
Practicing them. Yeah. Practicing your disagreements. Definitely.
And sometimes getting schooled and kind of walking away and going, maybe I don't believe what I believe in. I have to go do some research now because I think I found something new out.
Yes,
by being vulnerable and being willing to grow. Yeah, I think it is tough. And it is interesting, you know, when you come back to psilocybin, everybody's your friend and you're willing to listen to anybody and everything, you know, you're open to everything.
Yeah, absolutely. It absolutely facilitates that connection. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the other thing we're missing, what you're talking about, that intergenerational learning and being together, like sitting around a campfire with every generation, or just looking back to even, you know, the ways, even if you look at the ways that that psychedelics are coming into our Western society, if you look back into the indigenous ways of using psychedelics,
they
were always used in community. They were always, they were never in isolation. And these communities don't believe, like they believe that you are wounded in community and therefore you must be healed in community. And, you know, I'm doing some work right now with an organization called Gathering Groups that I'm really excited about.
Oh, yeah. Tell us about that.
Yeah. The concept is healing in community, with psilocybin being used as a tool for that, but community being really the medicine. And so these are small groups, you know, 6 to 8 people. We actually meet online for programs of 12 weeks long.
Okay.
But what we're doing in those 12 weeks is learning the language of connection, learning the language of the mushrooms, preparing to come together at about week 8 to have a mushroom ceremony, and then continuing to integrate as a community for 4 weeks afterwards. And so what we're really doing is building resilience and building, exposing ourselves vulnerably and learning what it feels like to be in an authentic community. By the time we get to doing the medicine together as a group, it's not even like you hear about retreats, you know, down in Jamaica, Costa Rica or whatever. You fly in, you're with a group for 5 days, you fly out. So you're doing it together in a group, but not in community. with people who now know you authentically and they care for you. And you
kind of responsible for each other, right? After this.
And, you know, Ken, just I get shivers this when I think about the experiences that people get out of this specific model compared to kind of the legalization route that we're going, where it's like one person with two therapists in a clinical environment. You know, it needs to be done that way for a lot of reasons with the medical framework that we're working on. So a step towards accessibility. But I really feel that this model Gathering Groups is using, they're bringing together the best of Western medicine as far as Western, not medicine, Western theories and concepts like the polyvagal theory and the evolved nest concept. They're bringing all that together with the Indigenous ways of knowing and learning and being, and with a lot of Indigenous leadership of how traditionally these plant medicines have been used in community.
Okay.
And it's just, it's very unique. And as I said, the results that I've seen and experienced are outstanding. They have been collecting evidence as well with Quantified Citizen that also collected all the data for the world's largest microdosing study. So we will have data points to show the efficacy over time. And we are actually working towards a clinical trial with Health Canada with groups of first responders to be able to legally access this model. And we're looking at, you know, the first responders in our communities, the trauma, the things that they experience, the things that they go through, the crisis of mental health that they are experiencing, and all that they put on the line for us all the time, we're really, really compelled to support them and help them. Mm-hmm. And they are a great population for this model because they are least likely to seek that one-on-one kind of talk therapy support or the other alternatives. They work in a crew, they eat in a crew, they sleep in a crew, they cook in a crew, and they can heal in a crew.
It's genius. I mean, this is so logical. Being on a trip, but you know, I never ate mushrooms and went by myself. I went to a festival, had some fun, I was with other people. It was a group, it was always a healing kind of a bonding thing together. So this very sterile clinical environment. I like the idea of knowing each other, being really intentional about knowing, like, Dana, what are you trying to get out of this, right? And I know what you're trying to get out of it, and I know what I'm when we get in together, I'm somewhat still aware.
Right. And you've been sharing so vulnerably for the last 2 months together. They know you better than a lot of your family or friends do at that intimate level that we just don't.
Oh, absolutely.
We don't have time for small talk in this model, that the Gathering Groups model. There's no small talk. We're getting to the core. Why are you here? Why are you here? What's going on for you? What went on in the past? What do you hope for the future? When do you feel scared? When do you feel great? Like, let's talk about you. Really you and why you're here.
This is also, you know, one of the things that I think the model is kind of suffers under, at least a lot of the ones I see being developed is this 1-to-1 or even 2-to-1. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's $3,500, maybe $7,500, depends where you're going and who's watching you, what city you're in, and what studio you go to. You know, but even at its lowest price, $2,500, I think I've heard $2,500, something like this for a guided session. I mean, it's unaffordable. No one can afford that.
Well, let me tell you something else that's really exciting about Gathering Groups is these 12 weeks, they always have two facilitators. And one of those facilitators is always a registered clinical counselor. And private health insurance companies in Canada will cover the cost of the 12. It won't cover the medicine day.
But they cover the therapy.
They will cover the therapy.
Because you have a licensed person.
This makes it accessible, cost effective, and also scalable. Like, we can reach that many more people. when we're doing it
this way. And that's the first thing. I mean, the two things. One is this has always been meant to be, like you said, this has always been in community.
Yeah.
And interesting that that is the way to get out of the cost structure. This never occurred to me when I was talking to other people. Just because the model is the model, right? It's, you know, it's a therapist or two people in a room and you come in there and you do your trip and then you leave.
And I have to say, like, I have no disrespect for that model as well. I think it's actually necessary that we're taking that model, which is the legalization route, because we need the regulators on board. And the regulators need to see it done in this way. So it's one avenue. And yes, this is for, like, in Canada, you can legally have psilocybin therapy, and MDMA is coming. And it's through doctors and psychiatrists and prescriptions, and only for treatment-resistant depression. And you have to prove that you've tried everything else in the books, or for end-of-life anxiety for cancer patients. Like, specific.
I did see that as well in Canada for end-of-life.
Yeah. So, you know,
that's got some powerful.
Yeah, it's putting us forward, right? But I think that decriminalization has to happen as well, where we just are allowed to have access to these medicines in other ways besides the prescription model that, you know, your psychiatrist writes a script and then you go and you have your therapy with therapists.
It seems, I mean, I don't know how absurd it is when I was just listening to you realizing we have to have legal access to these things that grow out of the ground.
Right? Yeah, I know. Yeah, just don't get me started there.
It's kind of weird though.
Organic, non-toxic, available to everybody, but don't pick them and don't eat them.
And if you possess them, we can throw you in jail.
It's crazy.
Oh, I love our governments.
Yeah.
They're so logical.
Exactly. I'm optimistic. You know, we are making great strides and we're getting there. So.
Well, it's people growing up now. We've got different people in office in every generation, I think, you know, is kind of sees the opportunity to make things a little bit better, and definitely better on that side. I think, as much as I love Big Pharma, it could let the natural medicines have their dance.
Yes, I agree.
They have their place, right? We need the whole spectrum.
Absolutely.
Dana, awesome conversation. What else? I mean, anything else you want to add? I think I'm trying to think of how to close it out. It's been kind of cool and very interesting. I'm super excited about this, the two things on that model.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, that is what I am most excited and passionate about these days. And I think side by side with that, I also do support people through microdosing protocols. And microdosing, I also am quite excited about, because it's a way for people who are new to these medicines, curious about these medicines, to become familiar with the potential benefits. And it's very accessible. You don't have to go and, you know, take off and go grow up in the jungle, or, you know, go through the medicalized route. And these beautiful, subtle shifts that are happening, I can say, particularly for a population of mothers. If you have not yet talked to this woman named Tracy T, who runs an organization called Moms on Mushrooms, you got to get to her next. But moms, you know, are really finding microdosing to be so beneficial to their support, their mental wellness, and at the same time allow them to carry on with their everyday tasks and such important responsibilities of raising their children. So, yeah, microdosing is another area that I'm quite excited about.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, it seems to be new, at least new to us, maybe not new to other communities. But I think over time we'll see what the benefits are. I've done a little bit of it, and I've played around with the different ways, and I've seen some benefits. It's quite beneficial.
Yeah, there's quite a bit of evidence now showing there's also a couple of clinical trials that point to expectation bias and placebo effect. So if you expect it to work, it's more likely to work.
Sure, of course.
I kind of take the words of Dr. James Fadiman, who is a psychedelic researcher, and he's known as the godfather of modern day microdosing. And he said, you know, if it is a placebo effect, if it is expectation bias, let's take that as a benefit of microdosing. Right? Like if it's working, it's working. And there are hundreds and thousands of anecdotal reports of it working. So
Yeah. Don't just enjoy it. Why fight it? And it's not like there's a chemical behind it where there's a balance between, you know, I think it's working and there's some body harm. It's a natural substance. It's not hurting your body.
Yeah,
so if you think it's
anti-inflammatory, women's hormonal health issues, and it's beautiful. It's educating people about microdosing is quite interesting because we're so stuck in our pharmaceutical model that people think it's like, oh, I can just replace my antidepressant and I pop my pill and I feel better. It's like, well, not quite. It's like practice. And a relationship, and you need to work as well. And guess what? It's not going to mask your symptoms so you can get on with the day. It's probably going to bring them up so you can deal with them, clear them out, and then you can actually genuinely feel better. So,
I would usually more like exactly. It's a little bit of a knock on the window. I don't think it's going to. It the whole point is it doesn't mask it.
Right. Yeah. Right?
It shows you. I think it presents stuff to you. Like you said, it's an opportunity. So it'll present to you things you're struggling with or things you should be addressing.
Yes.
Yeah. And allows you in a way to do it.
To address them. Right. Yeah.
Dana, awesome conversation. Thanks again for being a guest. Tell us a little bit. I didn't put up your banner. Let's just read it off real quick. So people can find you and stuff.
Sure. So this website is theflourishacademy.org. So that is my main website.
Okay.
And you can find me on most social channels with
yes.
The Flourish Academy. And one of the places that you can find me or the rest of my team 3 days a week is on an app that's called Clubhouse app. It's an app for your iPhone or your Android. And it was really a big rage during COVID, and many people who were on there have left, but the psychedelic community stays strong there. We have a community, community is one of my pillars, of about 3,000 people, and we meet there 3 mornings a week, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday at 9 a.m., and have almost like phone-in talk radio shows is basically what they're like. And so we bring in experts from all around the world. And on Wednesdays, we talk about entheogens and the divine feminine, or entheogens and the divine masculine, alternating. Thursdays is always a deep dive into psychedelic microdosing, and Fridays is psychedelics 101. So if you're looking for education, community, mm-hmm. guidance, all my pillars, you can find that on the Clubhouse app. So I'll give you a link for that to share.
Yeah.
And then
we'll put that on the episode. We'll put that on the audio episode.
Perfect. And then finally, I just want to nod out to gatheringgroups.ca, where you can join gathering groups from anywhere in the world, because 12 weeks of it are virtual. And then just make your way to Vancouver for your 1 day psilocybin ceremony. Keep in mind, for those of you down in the States, this is all in Canadian dollars. So accessibility, again, it's like cheapest chips for you.
Yeah. Just come over the border. Just get over there and drive over the border.
So, yeah. Oh, it's just such a pleasure to share these things that I'm so passionate about. And I'm so passionate because I've seen and experienced the changes in our mental health, in our mental wellness. And I just, I know that these are a solution for the future.
Yeah. And like you said, if we can solve some of the puzzles around how many people, and I think that's the biggest, you've probably kind of cracked that code for how to get this to more people.
Yeah.
And it's not a manipulation. It's coming back to the purpose, which is in groups.
Yeah, exactly. This is this is how it's always been done.
It just makes way more sense. Yeah. Now I understand, like, the whole single thing, very strange to me, because I never took mushrooms alone. I never crawled inside a bed. I was always outside. Sunshine was great. Nature was great. People were great. You want to be around more humans, right? You like being around humans, especially all other good humans.
Yeah.
You don't want to be around bad humans. At that point, and you naturally can feel a good human and the bad human.
Absolutely. That's exacerbated, isn't it? You know, super. Right away. You feel the energy.
Yeah, bad people just, they look bad.
Yeah. Absolutely. I have to say that there is a place for the more medicalized model and for the two therapists.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely a place, but we want this medicine to be accessible to everybody because everybody has a birthright to this medicine. And so we have a way of getting Absolutely. It to it. Yeah.
Dana, thanks again so much.
Thanks,
everybody. Yeah. And thanks everybody for, if you're listening to this on the audio version, thanks for hanging in with us. Please drop down and give us a little rating. Make sure you're following and make sure you even got the little bell rung at the top. They make it about as hard as they can to follow somebody and to give us some love. But thanks for hanging into it till the end. Dana, hang around for 30 seconds.
Sure.
I'll see you on the other side.
Sure.
Yeah, loose, baby.
But we're about to go and make this vessel with these great professionals in public glass. We're not part of the community, but we're from the outer family of glass blowing. Yeah, we're going to go make a magical giant jar with optic lenses so that if you turn it, it changes all the time. So if you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change.